Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Sherrill Gerald Quinn on this 6th of February 2016 as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram and follow me at Real Gerald Quinn. iTunes.apple.com. Look up 1211 Sports Talk and, you know, check us out. Review, comments, questions on the show. Five stars. You prefer five stars, but, you know, four do. We'll take four stars. We're almost close to Super Bowl 50. A little over 24 hours. We ready for a Carolina-Denver showdown. Possibly the last time you will see Peyton Manning on a football field. And, you know, chances are we think that, you know, despite nothing concrete that he came out and said that he will retire, we think that it's going to be Peyton Manning's last game as a, not only as a Denver Bronco, but as a NFL quarterback in general. You know, some similarities to Super Bowl, you know, to the Super Bowl that John Elway, I believe it was Super Bowl 32. Yeah, Super Bowl 32, Green Bay was going for back-to-back championships. You know, you're going against the, you know, Denver was a heavy underdog in that game. At least, they might have been 11-point underdogs in that game. Green Bay, of course, was coming off a title. Brett Favre at that point in time was the best quarterback in the league, easily the best quarterback in the league. And you had this John Elway, 38 years old, seeking a championship, an elusive championship, had been 0-3 in Super Bowls, and, you know, Denver pulls off the upset, in which now we look back at it it wasn't as big an upset considering that Denver were going to win a second straight Super Bowl the following year, and considering that the previous year, the 96 Broncos were a 13-win team that was a Super Bowl favorite, and they got upset, of course, by Baltimore and Jacksonville. So it didn't look, now, you know, looking back on years later, does not look as big of an upset as it did at the time. But you have Peyton Manning again, similar situations, and minus the fact that he does have a title, could be his last game. Going up against a quarterback who's going to be the MVP of the league once that announcement is officially made tonight in the NFL honors, as they do the NFL honors. And, you know, everybody's rooting for him, just like everybody was rooting for Elway, everybody's rooting for Peyton Manning, despite the fact, and this is ironic, despite the fact that it was not the Carolina Panthers who got a player sent home. It was the Denver Broncos who actually sent the player home this week. Denver is, without question, the sentimental favorites by far and away. And I don't think it's even close. Considering everybody wants Denver to win the game, and I don't know if it's as much as wanting for Peyton Manning. I mean, Peyton Manning, this game, you know. This is the icing on the cake. This is not like a guy who's trying to win, you know, his first Super Bowl. You know, once you get that first Super Bowl, everything else is gravy. It's just getting that one Super Bowl that could be that for a great quarterback. That's, you know, that takes the pressure off. I mean, go ask Steve Young as a lead quarterback. Of course, Steve Young won three Super Bowls with the 49ers, but winning that number one, that first one as the lead guy, took all the pressure off. And after that, it was just, you know, let me go out there and have fun. Go ask John Elway. So, Peyton, listen, this Super Bowl certainly mean a lot to Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning's career, his legacy is set, is more than set in stone. The Super Bowl is not going to drop him. It's not going to elevate him. It's not going to, like, if he wins the Super Bowl, like, we're not going to say Peyton Manning's the greatest quarterback of all time. No. No, that ship has sailed. He had opportunities. You know, probably it was that New Orleans Super Bowl that he probably had opportunity to be mentioned in that conversation. But that was, of course, that was not meant to be with the Saints taking up the Colts 31-17 a couple of years ago. So, no, you know, man, again, it would be great for Manning to get a second Super Bowl, he can ride off into the sunset, great storylines, be a perfect way to end what has been one of the great NFL careers of all time. But this is not going to elevate him into the Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, Tom Brady level as far as topping those guys. It is not. As a matter of fact, I don't think it would even put him over Elway, to be honest with you. That's my personal opinion. But, I mean, again, Peyton Manning is strongly cemented as one of the top five quarterbacks of all time. That is without question. Nor will it drop his status as an all-time great quarterback. And people say, well, he's only won in 3 Super Bowls. And bottom line is he got to 4 Super Bowls. That's the bottom line. So, I mean, this to me, this is a icing on the cake game for Peyton Manning. It's not a legacy game for Peyton Manning. Of course, you know, you don't want to ever get to the Super Bowl and lose. But this is not the all-in-all-be-all for one Peyton Manning. For Cam Newton, this is a game that could establish him, first of all, as a first, you know, as one of, you know, what, 3 African American quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl as a starting quarterback, Doug Williams, Russell Wilson being the other 2. So that, you know, that is something I'm sure that he certainly will take pride in. This, you know, he wins the Super Bowl, he becomes the face of the NFL. Love it or hate it. I mean, that's all there is to it. 18-1 team, league MVP, Heisman Trophy winner, national championship, number one draft pick in 2011, and now in year what, 6, year 6 of his career. Year 5 of his career, went to win the Super Bowl in his 5th year of his career. He jumps into that face of the league status as the guy in the NFL. I mean, this for him, this is a game that can take you, that can take him from a from another level to an absolute another level. Again, the hardest thing is to get that first Super Bowl as a quarterback. You know, go ask Dan Marino, go ask so many great player quarterbacks who have never won the Super Bowl, Dan Fouts, just to name a few. So that's the hardest thing, to get that first Super Bowl. He gets that one. He gets that first Super Bowl this early in his career. Again, takes him to that status, and you know, he's just getting started. I mean, again, he's still a very young player, 26, 27 years old, and hasn't even reached his ceiling yet. And it's scary for the rest of the NFL, because Carolina is going to be a problem moving forward. When you have that guy, we had 2 young studs on the defensive league, Keekly and Norman, as a cornerback. They have, you know, good offensive line, and they've shown that they don't need dynamic skill players, especially offensively. They don't need a dominant wide receiver, a dominant running back, have an above average tight end who's very good, but they don't need the dominant skill players to win. They've shown the blueprint to win, to reach a Super Bowl type level and to a championship type level. But for Cam Newton, this is the ultimate, to me, pressure game. I think it's way more, it's much more pressure on Cam Newton from a football standpoint than it is on Peyton Manning, to be honest with you. Peyton Manning's been there, done that, 4 Super Bowl. Cam Newton coming in with the bravado, league MVP, first Super Bowl appearance. Pressure is, to me, is on the better team. The pressure to me is squarely on Cam Newton. see how he handles it, and we'll see how he handles that pressure come tomorrow evening. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of 12 Living Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Flynn. We'll be right back. Is a call number on this latest edition of the 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn Super Bowl edition. As we look ahead to Super Bowl 50, we'll obviously break down the game, talk about the game, some of the matchups, but you know how we also will discuss how you navigate a Super Bowl day. As we all know, the Super Bowl day can be the longest sports day because the game doesn't start till 6:30, and we as NFL fans are conditioned to having our games at 1 o'clock. You know, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, boom, 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 boom. It'll be a long, long day. You know, when you eat, when you get the wings, get the pizza, and it's an art to navigating a Super Bowl day without either burning yourself out or without just, this is the way to do it. It's the way to do it. We'll explain that. Yeah, we had fun with this last year. We'll continue to have fun with it. Again, long, it is a very long day to navigate as a sports fan. I mean, when you're used to having games at 1 o'clock, when you go to church, you come home, the game's on. Yeah. Maybe you can run some errands and different things, but we'll talk about that. Couple of sporting notes. Johnny Manziel is just basically, fell off the wagon. I mean, when your father's coming out and basically saying, hey, you could be suicidal, you need to be admitted to a psych ward with medical treatment, and your agent drops you, and all these things are coming out now. It's clear that Johnny Manziel is lost. It's not even funny anymore. I mean, we're making joke of it in past podcasts about his entitlement and all these chances that he was getting, and he really has gotten a lot of chances. I mean, let's be honest, he's gotten a lot of chances, and he's continued to just mess up time after time. The Browns out there are going to part ways with them, come March when, free agency comes around, without question. That was one of the stipulations I think that Hugh Jackson, who's the Browns coach, had when he got the job, that he was ready, that he did not want any part of coaching Johnny Manziel. Again, who can absolutely blame him? The guy is a train wreck off the field, and he's a average to mediocre quarterback on the field. I mean, Johnny Manziel, he's just not worth the headache anymore. It's just not worth it. And, you only know if you can get to an NFL season, let alone run a team as a quarterback. But right now, this thing with the girlfriend and, the whole, and even beyond that, which the NFL started looking into, the guy is an alcoholic. I mean, that's all the story. He's an alcoholic who can't control himself, and who needs a ton of help. And to have a guy, to have somebody like Deion Sanders come out there and defend him was just despicable, as far as I'm concerned. And you're an ex-player who's seen guys with addictions, you know what it looks like, and you're gonna sit up there and defend that guy and blame his problems on being in love. I mean, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. Not blaming on Johnny Manziel's girlfriend, who he may or may not hit physically, but blaming on the relationship. The fact that he's in love, he has a broken heart, so he's going, all of a sudden he's going to pieces. Like, no, Deion, like, have a clue. he's not the guy. Is the guy has a alcohol problem. He's an alcoholic. He has a problem with drinking. He can't control himself. His relationships are concerned. He has some. It's clearly has some love issues and some relationship issues, which will be caused. Which you know, the two kind of go hand in hand. You know, when you're an alcoholic and you know if your relationship's not the greatest, I don't know too many alcoholics who are in great relationships. When a relationship is just you know, just sweet every day, where you guys are deeply in love, but you're an alcoholic, and that's not having any effect on your relationship, especially if you're living with that person. I don't know, but the bottom line is he's an alcoholic who needs help and who needs a lot of help. And again, you as an NFL team, he's not suspended, which I think he probably will be. Nobody in their right mind should even consider touching Johnny Manziel. I mean, you have to be out of your mind to even want that guy on your football team. Louisville is going to impose a 1-year ban, self-imposed 1-year ban. They will not play the postseason this year, despite being ranked in the top 20. Had a great win Monday night over North Carolina, who was at the time ranked number 2. It was by far their best win of the season. When a team in any program, when a program self-imposes its own ban, has a self-imposed ban, that tells you that there's more to come, and that tells you that they're going to get hit. They're going to take a major hit. A major program, a championship program with a legendary coach like Louisville, you normally wait to the process to play out. Kind of like what North Carolina is doing right now. I mean, North Carolina could be sanctioned at any time over the course of this year. That investigation for the academic fraud is still ongoing for North Carolina and Roy Williams, and for the entire sports program at North Carolina, football included. But they're kind of waiting out the process, you know, a lot of legal stuff involved and things of that nature. Louisville, they said, no, we're going to try to, you know, jump ahead on this, and hopefully this, you know, this 1-year ban will lighten any penalties that the NCAA gives to us. I don't think that's going to be the case, but you're a fan of Louisville basketball in terms of that, in that program in general. You have to be a little bit nervous about the future of that program moving forward. But I wouldn't be surprised if Pitino's out there after this year. I would not be shocked, because there's certainly more on the way. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk, featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn. We'll be right back. Seven 215-6180 is your call number on this last edition of 1211 Sports Talk, featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn on this 6th of February, as we discuss the world of sports. As we discuss the world of sports, and you might get a little pop culture in, but mainly, of course, this weekend, is about Super Bowl 50. NFL is going to go back next year to changing the logo back to the Roman numeral, so it'll be L1 next year, and not Super Bowl 50, and not the number 50. That's the NFL thing, probably even a marketing ploy, I feel, but that's what they're going to do. NFL honors come out tonight. All their major awards, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive and Defensive Rookies of the Year. The MVP basically is a wrap. We know Cam Newton is going to be an MVP. Because where he is, who knows? Josh Norman. You can have certainly Watt. David Watt will be up there as well. I don't think he deserves it this year. Luke Kuechly should be in the running for that, and a couple other guys. But I think Josh Norman, you know, would be the front runner for that particular award. But the most important one, MVP, is certainly a lock to be Cam Newton. Coach of the Year should be interesting as well. You can make a case for Belichick. I would give the Ron Rivera, team 17-1, 15-1 season. Nobody in their right mind thought that Carolina would be this good and would be a Super Bowl contender. I mean, nobody. So I would think that award would lean towards Ron Rivera as far as that goes in terms of winning the Coach of the Year award. He certainly deserves it. Look at this matchup, and again, last week, I had a good sense of where I was going in terms of the direction of my pick. But if you look at the matchup, most people think that this is going to be a close game. Most people think Carolina's going to win a very close game, that Denver's defense will keep them in the game, and that Peyton Manning will make a couple of plays in order to the Denver defense. Peyton Manning will make a couple of plays to offset that tremendous Carolina pass rush with their front seven. But to me, I'm looking at the matchup between not so much the Denver defensive line, which can get to the quarterback versus Carolina's offensive line. I'm looking at it in reverse. I'm looking at the matchup of the Carolina defensive line versus a shaky Denver Broncos offensive line. A couple of weeks ago, we saw New England, whose defensive performance was, kind of overshadowed by Von Miller and company. But New England had a tremendous defensive performance in terms of last couple weeks ago against Denver. I mean, they got to Peyton Manning, they hit Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning did enough, didn't turn over the ball, which was a major key in that game. But that was they got to Peyton Manning. I mean, they hit Peyton Manning, sacked him a couple times, knocked him around. The Carolina defensive line can get to Peyton Manning. I mean, there's no question that they can get to Peyton Manning. Denver's running game is going to have to. They're going to have to run the ball at least, I would say, a minimum of 25 to 30 times to offset Carolina's pass rush. You can't have Peyton Manning standing back there. You can't have Peyton Manning standing back there without an effective running game. Again, I'm not concerned so much about the yards that Denver accumulates against the Carolina. It's about the attempts. They get 20. If they have under 25 or under 20 rushing attempts, it's going to be a long night for Denver, because that Carolina defensive line can wreck a game. They don't have one. Kuechly, we know what Kuechly is, but he's a tackle machine, tremendous in coverage. More of that than he is, a guy who's going to get sacks on a quarterback. That line, that front four up front, they rotate, seven to eight guys, so they're going to be fresh. Again, the Denver offensive line has been shaky all year long. It's been, they've had injuries. They're just not that good. Clady, of course, we know, he's an all-pro caliber player. Pro Bowl caliber player, hasn't played all year. But they've done it, that the offensive line has just been bad this year. Run protection and pass protection. And so to me, I'm looking at that matchup more than anything as far as what does Denver do about that particular matchup. How will they hold up? Will they have to bring in guys to, block? Are they going to be able to send out their receivers in pass play, during pass plays? So, and how are they going to attack that Carolina defense? I mean, to me, the way they attack Carolina's defense is with the deep passes. The problem Denver has is, one, Peyton Manning's arm, and two, will Peyton Manning have enough time to even for them to even run deep patterns and to challenge them deep? And you have guys, you have Sanders and Demaryius Thomas who can both get down the field. But again, can Peyton Manning make those throws? Will that offensive line hold up against a ferocious Carolina pass rush? Three 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of 12-11 Sports Talk. He's a surreal Gerald Quinn. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Super Bowl 50 edition of 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Quinn as we discuss the world of sports. Super Bowl 50, a little over 24 hours away. Weather should not be a factor. Should not be a factor in this game as both teams will be playing on a brand new surface that they always bring in for every Super Bowl. They always bring a brand new grass surface. And, of course, the 49ers' new stadium. And one of the stories that's been underreported that I feel, I haven't heard too much about, saw it in the Huffington Post yesterday, a couple of days, or maybe yesterday, and it was written maybe on Thursday, has been the fact that the people of San Francisco, Santa Clara, that area, are absolutely lamenting having the Super Bowl in that area. You've had some vandalisms in terms of the statues of some Super Bowl 50 statues. San Francisco taxpayers are on the hook for $5 million for transit and security planning. And then, from what I understand, what the story says, they're not going to get that money back. It's amazing to me that the NFL to be, billions of dollars corporation, and a city have to basically flip the bill for a Super Bowl. Like, you're not, cities are supposed to flourish financially because of the Super Bowl. Flourish. Not lose money. Now, I find it hard to believe that when a few years ago, it was determined that San Francisco, that Santa Clara, that area was going to get a new stadium, that they wanted the game. That's a new thing in the NFL. Not a new thing, but that's the latest thing in the NFL. If you get a new stadium that in a warm area, warm weather area, or it's a dome, you are going to get a Super Bowl. We saw it in Dallas a couple years ago. We saw it in Dallas a few years ago. The Giants with MetLife Stadium, despite the fact that it was a cold weather. And we're going to see a couple of years, 2 or 3 years down the line, 2 years down the line in Minnesota. When they get their new stadium, they're going to get a Super Bowl. So that's kind of been, you get a new stadium, you get a Super Bowl, you get the game. I mean, there's all this to it. So I find it hard to believe that the fans or that the people of that area did not want that game initially. But what they probably did, what they didn't know is that they would be flipping the bill the transit and the security and things of that nature. And I just don't see how that is possible, considering that the NFL is a billion upon billion dollar corporation, and that frankly, from a business standpoint, the NFL is one of the most well-run organizations in the world, not just sports, but in the world. And the NFL is making more money now than it's ever made. Ever. The NFL has never been bigger. Ratings, Super Bowl, these Super Bowl, look how much these Super Bowl ads. I mean, the NFL, it's just that game. The Super Bowl tomorrow will be the highest rated program in the history of television tomorrow. In the history of television. You have well over 100 million people watch that game tomorrow. Period. So, I don't understand how this occurs. People in San Francisco in that area are not happy, to say the least, about what's going on, about having the game there. They're not. And you think that that game for a week would bring a economic boom to the economy of the area, but that, you know, it seems like that's not like the money that's going to be brought in is not going to offset the, you know, money that they have to dish out. This is, to me, it's a crime. I can't, you know, if you're in the NFL, you're embarrassed by this story coming out. You have to be embarrassed by the story. But again, the NFL is going to make money hand over foot with the ads and with the television range and with the whole, not, you know, the Super Bowl 50 logo and things of that nature. But people in San Francisco are not happy about that. 347-215-6180. We'll certainly get back to the game, but we're going to get a little shift of focus and get on the NBA and NBA when we return on this latest edition of 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. Super Bowl 50 tomorrow. A huge matchup tonight in the NBA. One of the rare regular season games that I get excited for. But this one is going to be one to watch. Golden State and OKC. Both teams are playing great. Oklahoma City, you know, has kind of been lost under the radar of, you know, of the Steph Curry, you know, era in terms of what he's doing, San Antonio's brilliance, and, of course, the drama that goes along with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So they've kind of, you know, and I didn't even mention, you know, Kobe's retirement. So kind of been lost in the shuffle, but they are quietly putting together a tremendous year, 38-13. They have, again, two of the top five players in the league in their starting lineups in Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook has been just phenomenal this year. He has 24 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds as a point guard, shooting 46% from the field. That's how great Steph Curry has been. Because, nobody's talking about this. In any other year, I think in any other year, Russell Westbrook would be the MVP. To be honest with you, I really do. I think he's having that dominant of a year, and this is every game. I mean, Russell Westbrook will have a triple double at the end of three quarters. I mean, how many triple doubles has he had with a whole quarter play? He's been just remarkable this year. And again, that matchup is absolute must see TV. Because right now, you know, Curry is at another level right now. What he did against the Wizards. And again, give John Wall a lot of credit. I came to that game thinking that John Wall had no chance in that game, the way Curry was playing, especially the way Curry was playing against other top point guards and other elite players. Look what he had done against San Antonio, Chicago, and Cleveland over the last couple of weeks, and he had just killed those teams. John Wall, you know, Curry had 51 in that game, 19-28. John Wall had 41 and 10. So that was a great point guard battle. Curry just absolutely put on a show at Verizon Center, 11-14 from three-point range, came within one three-pointer of tying Kobe Bryant's and Donyell Marshall's record for most 3 points made in the game. I thought that record was falling. Eventually, that record's going to fall. He's going to have a game where he makes 13 or 14 threes. I think it will happen before this year, though. But eventually, over the course of his career, that record is going to fall. There's no two ways about it. I mean, the efficiency, at one point in the game, he was 13 of 14 from the field at one point in the game. And you looked at him, he had this one shot And again, to me, we are, again, all due respect to LeBron James, who's still a great player, still obviously a top five player, and you can make a case the second best player in the world. We are in the, we're absolutely in the Steph Curry era. There's no two ways about it. It's his time, it's his era. He, you know, it's come down to where it's come down to you have Steph Curry, Golden State has Steph Curry, and nobody else does. Like, if he's on your team, you're winning a championship. He's that dominant right now. Again, he has a lot of help. Let's not lose sight of that. Draymond Green is playing. I can make a case that Curry, Green, and Thompson are three of the top 15 players in the league right now. I can make that case. Klay Thompson's been phenomenal ever since he's gotten healthy. And he's had some games where he's had 40 points, had a tremendous game against the Knicks a week ago. So having your off guard that can go from 45 or 50 in a given night, it doesn't hurt. But, again, Oklahoma City and Golden State play some tremendous games when those two are healthy. I expect this game to be the definition of up and down transition. I mean, this game, I'm telling you, this is a 141, a 141 to 132 type game. This game is going to be fast-paced. And Oklahoma City wants to run, too. They want to run. I think Oklahoma City believes that they can outrun anybody. Can outrun anybody, athletic on perimeter as well. But, you know, Golden State's better, but you will see, though, again, you won't see any back down from Russell Westbrook in terms of attacking Steph Curry. He will go after Curry. He will, you know, what you worry about is him picking up a couple of cheap fouls and him being overexcited for this game. He's going to, because, you know, Curry's been talking a lot of trash, saying that we're going to have two victories, one Saturday and one Sunday. And right now, listen, Curry can say what he wants. I mean, that team is that dominant, and he's playing that well. So looking forward to that Saturday night NBA game, perfect lead up to the Super Bowl, where you have three of the top. You're going to see three of the top five players in the world. And you're going to see probably five of the top 15 players in the world on one court, right, in terms of Curry, Thompson, Green, Westbrook, and Durant. So that's going to be a lot of talent on one court as Oklahoma City travels to the Oracle, where Golden State, I believe, has won, I want to say 41 straight. I want to say they've won 41 straight dating back to last season. They, along with San Antonio, have these long, long home winning streaks. San Antonio got back on track in a big way against Dallas. Just completely taking Dallas apart. That game, at one point, they were up by as many as 36 points. They just cruised to an easy victory in Dallas. No Duncan, no Ginobili. Ginobili could be out for like a month. Duncan, they don't know when he's going to come back with the knee. And listen, you don't think Tim Duncan still can impact the game. Look at San Antonio's defensive numbers before Duncan versus after Duncan. It's not a coincidence that Golden State and Cleveland started lighting San Antonio up offensively with no Tim Duncan. And he means that much of a difference. Coming to that game last night, they were giving up 89 points a game with Duncan, 105 without him. So he's still, you know, he's not going to be a guy who's 20 or 10 anymore. But again, his presence in terms of he's what Kevin Garnett was late in his career to Boston Celtics as far as defensively. I mean, signal caller, you know, making sure where guys are at, making sure, he's the quarterback on the court. He's the quarterback, the defensive quarterback on the floor for the San Antonio Spurs. They have no chance, and I mean no chance, to win without a healthy Tim Duncan on the floor. So they're going to rest him as long as possible so they can get him healthy and get him ready for the playoffs. I don't, like, if you're San Antonio, if he misses 20 or 30 games, then so be it. Because at this point, you're not worried about, San Antonio is good enough to hold off. They won't fall below three. I mean, if you don't have home court against Oklahoma City, then it's worth it in terms of sacrificing that for the well-being and the health of one Tim Duncan. Cleveland, tough loss against Boston. On the buzzer beater by Avery Bradley. That was a tremendous play call by Brad Stevens coming out of timeout. It was great. He thought Isaiah Thomas, kind of used Isaiah Thomas as a decoy. on the dribble and gave a great pass to A.J. Bradley, who was completely in rhythm when he took that shot. And all of a sudden, Cleveland, after playing well in the initial beginning of the Tyronn Lue era, has lost two straight. That was a bad. See, I mean, Boston lost. Boston, you know, they have a good team. They're probably, you know, they're going to be hunting in contention for one of the last playoff spots. Boston's feisty, but the Charlotte loss was not a good one by Cleveland without Kemba Walker. You can't even get Charlotte without Kemba Walker. So that one was kind of shaky. So we'll see how Cleveland responds from back-to-back losses. Kobe had a big game, a couple of big games against New Orleans, and who did they play before that they beat? I can't think of the team. Minnesota, yes. That was a wild game in Minnesota. They beat Minnesota and New Orleans back-to-back games. Bryant coming off, has had now three straight 20-point games, so, you know, he's playing well. Again, it's a matter of, you know, if you're the Lakers, your goal is to have Kobe finish the season. So you have to rest him two or three games, and so be it. But the goal is to have him be able to finish the season, make it through April 13th. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this first edition of 12 Open Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. Well, we will look at some guys, some unknown soldiers in Super Bowl 50, some guys who may not be the biggest of names but could have big impacts, you know, a big impact on tomorrow's game. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition, 12 on the Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. Carolina, Denver. Carolina's a favorite by six and a half, and they should be the favorite. 17-1 on the season, played in better confidence, beat everybody in their way. So they deserve to be a favorite in the Super Bowl. And I think they probably would have been, even if New England would have been in the Super Bowl, I think they probably would have been favored as well. Maybe you put that number in half to like two or three. But Carolina certainly deserves to be the favorite in this game. A couple of guys who could have big impacts in this game that you may not be aware of, or may not, we don't hear too often. And I'm looking from a Carolina side, Kurt Coleman. Kurt Coleman has been a ball hawking safety this year, had like seven to eight interceptions. He's a guy that hovers around in that secondary. One of those Peyton Manning passes starts to float. Kurt Coleman could be a guy that could take advantage of that guy. He's a very, very good year in the back end of that Carolina defense. Again, the Carolina defense in the back end is not strong once you get past Josh Norman and Kurt Coleman. But those guys, Kurt Coleman, you know about Norman as a number one quarterback, one of the best corners in the league this year. But Kurt Coleman is a guy who can certainly have an impact on this game. In terms of Denver, you look at a guy, McManus, the kicker. And, the reason I say this, to me, Denver only wins this game if it's a low-scoring game. And I mean low-scoring. I'm talking about 20-17, 17-14, that type of game where McManus can make a number of field goals, can make a number of field goals and in terms of keeping Carolina at bay. Carolina wins, this game gets into the 20s or 30s. There's no way Denver doesn't have the offensive firepower to keep up with Carolina. They just don't. So somebody like McManus, you get inside the 20, you get inside a Carolina side of the field, there's no such thing. 3 points is a win, as far as I'm concerned. Normally you want seven, but 3 points is a win. McManus has been hot lately the last couple of games after a shaky part of the season where, he's missing easy kicks. even in that Denver altitude. But lately, the last couple of games, he's been hot. He's a guy, you know, he's capable of making 5 or 6 field goals in a game. He really is. He's that good. So he could be a guy who could have an impact on this game that, you know, that nobody talks about. Also, Corey Brown to Carolina. You know, he seemed, in the last couple of games, he seemed to make that one big play down the field that, you know, 40 or 50 yard pass play down the field. Cam Newton loves to take shots. Carolina, you know, for all the ground and pound and the physical play on the opposite line, they love to take shots down the field with Corey Brown and Ted Ginn. I mean, they are going to be ultra aggressive. They're going to challenge the Denver secondary, despite how great, you know, their secondary is with Chris Harris and Roby and Tamidi. They're going to take shots down the field. I mean, those guys, you know, Ginn and Corey Brown can fly. And yeah, the Carolina wide receivers are pretty good, or better than you think they are. Not great, but pretty good. So a guy like Corey Brown could, you know, he could do something. He could be like a Matthews was for Seattle last year, somebody that just comes out of nowhere and makes big plays against that Denver secondary. So keep your eyes on those three guys for impact players. I mean, we know about Devon Millers, you know about Cam Newtons, you know about a guy like Demaryius Thomas and what they can do, and Luke Kuechly and what he can do. But Corey Brown, Brandon McManus, and Kurt Coleman also can have big impact. Have a big impact on this game. On this game, without question. 347-215-6180 is call number. We will talk about how Cam Newton has handled the media over the course of Super Bowl week. So this Super Bowl week, we'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Joe Quinn. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of 12-11 Sports Talk. 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Joe Quinn as we ready for the golden anniversary of Super Bowl 50. Amazingly, there's been 50 Super Bowls. I remember, you know, first Super Bowl I watched personally was the Bears, and I can recollect was Bears Patriots back in the end with that great 85 Bears team. Of course, they ran, you know, earlier this week they ran ESPN 30 for 30 about that team was, they had, you know, 18-1, similar to this Carolina team. Though that Bears defense is much better than this Carolina team. That for a single season could have been the greatest defense of all time. But similar as far as bravado, physical, you know, personalities, you know, Brad, you know, coaches who, you know, wasn't afraid to let you know what's on their minds. So, you know, Ron Rivera may be a little bit less polarizing than Mike Ditka was, but some similar characteristics to those particular two teams. Those, I mean, that Bears team was much better. I mean, let's not get that mistaken. That was one of the most dominant teams of all time. That, you think about that Bears team in 85, they shut out the Rams, shut out the Giants, and give up only 10 points to the Patriots. So in 3 postseason games, they give up an average of 3 points a game. And that is one of the most dominant postseason runs in the history of the NFL. That team was just overpowering. Of course, lost that famous Dan Marino Monday night game in Miami. Other than that, they would have had a perfect season. Carolina seeking to join them and the 84-49ers as the only teams, well, in NFL history to win a Super Bowl and go 18-1. Of course, there's another team up in, you know, the Boston area who went 18-1 but was on the wrong side of 18-1 in terms of losing a Super Bowl. And that, of course, was the 2007 Patriots. And I just love the fact that the Patriots are not here. I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's great that the Patriots are not here. You just did not want to see another Patriots Super Bowl. Without question, didn't want to see it. Cam Newton, of course, last week, at the end of last week, really jumped ahead, to his credit, I feel, jumped ahead on what was going to be asked time after time over the course of media week, and that was about race. He jumped ahead on it, said, hey, I'm a black quarterback. That makes some people uncomfortable. That's why I get all the scrutiny. It's not just about the dancing and dapping and all that other stuff. And I completely agree with that premise. And, of course, the criticism from media and people alike came out, you know, as expected, trying to play the race card, looking for trouble, looking to draw attention to himself and what have you. I don't blame Cam Newton in the least bit for going that route. You're telling me that nobody's going to ask about him being an African-American quarterback despite those comments. I mean, you need to be drug tested. The question of race was going to come up regardless of what he said or didn't say. It was going to come up. So why not just jump out ahead of it? Why not attempt to dictate the conversation rather than having the conversation dictated to you? And that's what he did. And that pissed a lot of people off. So I felt like, you know, in the media, you know, I felt like you said all the right things this week, and the media said, hey, it's bigger than race. This is bigger than me, bigger than race, and he's completely right. This game, you know, he wins this game. This takes him to a whole nother level. He understands where this puts him, you know, being a Super Bowl winner and with that as a quarterback. And what that does for you, and what level that takes you to, and the kind of influences that he can have as a Super Bowl winning quarterback, especially if you win any. And I don't see how any situation where if Carolina wins, he doesn't win MVP of this game. A Super Bowl winning quarterback who is the MVP of the game, and the impact that he can have moving forward, it is bigger than him, and he's completely right. And again, I think the NFL, and I'll say this about the NFL in terms of the media access to the players. You know, it's one thing to have media day. You know, they used to have it on Tuesdays. They pushed it up to Monday. One thing to have it one day where players are bombarded day in, players are bombarded for hours upon hours. But you can't have media day every day. I mean, because the same questions are being asked. You know, and you saw Cam Newton at a Wednesday press conference. Basically, he's about to fall asleep. I mean, these are the same questions that he's had to answer Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so on and so on. Have the player, like, cut down some of that availability over the course of the week. I mean, you don't have to have the same players up there every single day. It just makes no sense. It makes no sense. I mean, you want to have different guys. You know, the media does not have to have access every single day for Super Bowl week, every day. If guys want to come on different radio shows and what have you, that's a totally different story. But not, I mean, this whole idea where, you know, that Cam Newton, that Peyton Manning has to be in front of a camera every, like, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it's ridiculous. I mean, it just makes no sense. I mean, nothing comes out of it. Because those guys, you know, those guys are smart enough. They're not going to say anything that they haven't said the first interview. Like Cam Newton said, listen, I'm giving you the same answers. You want me to answer the question differently? This is the same answer I had on Monday. It's not going to change. So, you know, I think the NFL needs to look into that about how, you know, media access in terms of players and coaches and things of that nature. Yeah, really. Because after a while, it's just like, okay, you've heard this question, you've heard that question, you've heard this answer, you've heard that answer. But as far as Cam Newton handling himself with the media, I don't think he could handle himself any better. I mean, Carolina has a team that's come in and say, hey, We're going to be cocky, brash. We're going to say what we want to say. We're going to enjoy this moment and play our game. And again, ironically, they haven't got any players sitting home because of the stage. Denver, though only a practice player, actually got a player sitting home. Not Carolina. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. The veteran Denver team that's been, eight Super Bowls, Peyton Manning, John Elway, guys that coached in Super Bowls and what have, not coached in Super Bowls, Kubiak, been in three Super Bowls. That team got somebody sent home. Not Carolina. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of 12 Minute Sports Talk featuring Surreal Joe Quinn. We'll be right back. Back to this next edition of 12 Minute Sports Talk featuring Surreal Joe Quinn. Almost forgot. I don't know how I can forget this, but I want to give a special, very special birthday shout out to one Chloe Quinn, who turned 5 yesterday, and got a chance to spend some time with her, and went to a toy store, and watching the 5-year-old pick out toys is. It's not quite on the level of women shopping for shoes. It's not quite on that level, but it's pretty close. Pretty close. and the thing about it is, her trying to decipher on which toy to pick, on what she likes, what she doesn't like, does she really like this, does she not like this, it is hilarious. I enjoyed every moment of it. Just watching her operate around that toy store and navigate those aisleways. Had a lot of fun with it. A lot of fun doing it. Hopefully, 5 years old, man, 5. Time has went by fast with her growing up this fast. And again, birthday shout out to one Chloe Quinn. Hope she enjoys it. I know the party was today. So certainly we'll get some party stories tomorrow when I see her along with Chad Quinn. And that's why Chad Quinn couldn't join the program. We had a birthday party today with his daughter, was on Chloe Quinn. Again, happy birthday to one Chloe Quinn, 5 years old. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of 12 Minute Sports Talk featuring Surreal Joe Quinn as we discuss Super Bowl 50. Now, these are one of the Super Bowls that has a number one offense, scoring offense, taking on the number one defense. And 18 times that has happened in prior Super Bowls, the number one defense has won 14 of those games. I would think that looking back at some of those games, that the team that had the number one defense probably more times than not was the better team. So I kind of look at that. If you're Denver, you're going to be reaching for things anyway. You're the underdog. You're playing a team that is better than you. Is better than you. You're playing a team that is, 17-1. So, you can reach for that. You can reach for the fairy tale ending from, Peyton Manning riding off on the white horse and going into the sunset. Here's the bottom line. This is not a good matchup for the Denver Broncos because the strength of Denver and how Denver beat New England was getting to the quarterback. Like, their defensive line dominated that game. Von Miller played one of the great defensive playoff games that you would ever see. He was just all over the place. DeMarcus Ware was great as well, but Von Miller was tremendous in that game. The way you handle a pass rush is one, solid offensive line, check. Carolina has one of the best in the league. Two, an effective running game. Carolina's had 31 straight games of rushing for over 100 yards. And three, this is something that's a bonus that most teams just don't have, a quarterback that can elude the rush. And Carolina obviously has that in Cam Newton. I don't think Denver's pass rush would be a major factor in this game. I just don't. I think Carolina will be able to neutralize the Denver pass rush. Matter of fact, Denver's going to have to be very disciplined in terms of how they rush the quarterback. Like, if they over-pursue, you're going to see 40, 50-yard runs for Carolina. Carolina will have a big rushing day if Denver doesn't stay disciplined in terms of how they come after Cam Newton. They're going to be very careful as far as how they rush Cam Newton, especially on the edges. Because you can think you can actually run past him, over-pursue, and he can run right by you. And the next thing you know, he's picked up 10 or 15 yards easily without being touched. So to me, that is where Denver, the one advantage that you think Denver would have in terms of that matchup, as far as their defensive line against anybody else's offensive line, they don't have that, I feel, against Carolina. They just don't. I don't think this game will be as bad as 2 years ago, Seattle-Denver. I think the Denver defense is very good. I think they are the best defense in the league compared to the Denver defense 2 years ago. So I think that Denver physically is tougher than what they were 2 years ago. Though Peyton Manning is not who he once was, and the offense is not as good, but Denver physically is better equipped for the Super Bowl than they were 2 years ago. But I think that I just think that they are playing a superior football team in the Carolina Panthers. I think it's Carolina's year. I think it's Cam Newton's year. I think that, you know, we could be seeing a new era in the NFL in regards to Cam Newton and Carolina. I really believe that they have a number of young pieces, young talent. Don't even have Kevin Benjamin. Don't even have him. They'll be getting him back next year. Ron Rivera obviously allows them to be themselves. You know, I'm not going to say that. Listen, I'm not going to compare them to the 92 Cowboys. Say they're going to run 3 off in 4 years. No, those days are done pre-salary cap. But what they do have is that dude. And that dude is a guy who, combined with the postseason and regular season, has over 50 touchdowns. And a guy who there's not a stage big enough for Cam Newton. I think this would be his game. I will take Carolina 31-17. I think it'll be fairly competitive. I think Carolina pulls away in the second half. I don't think the Denver offensive line can block Carolina, to be honest with you. And I don't think that Denver can expose the one major weakness that Carolina has, and that is the back end of that secondary. I don't think they can take advantage of that. I don't. So, again, Carolina 31, Denver 17. 12 minutes Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn will be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of 12 on Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn. Again, rate and review our program at itunes.apple.com. Look up 12 on Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn. You can ask questions, you can rate the program, you can put your 2 cents in. You know, we'll still love you. Love or hate us, we will still love you in the end. That's all, you know, that's all there is to it. We love all our fans, all our listeners and callers that support this program. A couple of programming notes. We have a number of programs coming up after the Super Bowl. One in particular, we're going to do something on the wire. That's a big announcement. We're going to do something on the wire. It's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks, so stay tuned for more information about that. The Wire, Revisited, look back at what I consider to be the greatest show in the history of television. So we'll have some fun with that in a couple weeks. You know, once Super Bowl be over with, you know, we'll talk about, you know, NFL free agency will be upon us. It'll be the doldrums of the NBA season. So there'll be plenty to talk about in the world of sports and pop culture. The Oscars are coming up, of course, in a few weeks. A lot of controversy behind that. We'll talk more about that. We'll do a program on that as well. So a lot to do in the next couple of weeks in terms of programming for 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Quinn. Looking forward to it. Certainly looking forward to it. But first is first. First comes first, and that's Super Bowl 50. And again, we started the program talking about these two quarterbacks and the different, you know, just different perspectives that they're probably going to have on this game. Look at Peyton Manning, you know, 39 years old, won a championship, has done everything that an NFL quarterback can do as far as with all the records and touchdowns and MVPs, five MVPs and what have you, Super Bowl MVP, been in a fourth Super Bowl with amazing. And get to listen, four Super Bowls with four different coaches. That is just remarkable. And enough can't be said about how difficult that is, not having the advantage of having one coach, one system for your entire career. Peyton Manning has done it in a variety, you know, with a variety of coaches, all of whom, with the exception of Tony Dungy, have been fired. So think about that. John Fox fired. You have Jim Moore fired. So Peyton Manning has done it with a number of coaches. And it's true to his just high level of consistent play over the course of his career. But right now, he frankly is not Peyton Manning, not who he once was. We expect that he will retire at the end of when this game is over, that he will retire, that this indeed will be his last game. How he goes out, we'll see. We'll see how he goes out, where he goes out, you know, into the sunset, or whether he is overshadowed by this new age quarterback who's coming in with all the bravado, 6'5", 250 pounds, who's coming in doing things his way. And that's, of course, Cam Newton, who has, to me, by far and away, the most pressure on him in comparison to Peyton Manning. Because with Peyton Manning, if Peyton Manning loses the game, we'll say, hey, it's Carolina's time. They're 18-1. It was their year, they were the best team, so on, they were favored, no shocker there. If they lose this game, if Denver loses this game. But Cam Newton, you know, this is his first Super Bowl appearance. All eyes on him, not only with his comments and with how he carries himself, but with just being in that first Super Bowl, how's he going to handle it? How's he going to deal with the pressure? Deal with being favored. So a lot of, Peyton Manning's been there, done that, four Super Bowls versus a guy in Cam Newton who will be in his first Super Bowl on the biggest stage in all of sports. And again, based on the pedigree, Heisman Trophy, national championship, won a championship in junior college, as well, based on, how he carries himself, he seems to be built for this moment. Like, it seems to be a stage that can't be big enough for one Cam Newton. So we'll see how he handles that. But completely two different perspectives from two different guys who, frankly, will have the largest age gap in Super Bowl history. Cam Newton's about 26 years old. To Peyton Manning's 39. So that 13-year age gap is the largest amongst the opposing quarterbacks in the history of Super Bowl, in the history of the Super Bowl. And two guys who are perceived completely differently. I mean, Cam Newton's the brash, considered arrogant, cocky quarterback versus Peyton Manning, who everybody loves. Everybody loves Peyton Manning. Everybody wants Peyton Manning to win this game. Everybody wants to see Peyton Manning walk off into the sunset. I personally think that more people want to see Cam Newton lose than want to see Peyton Manning win, to be honest with you. I really get that sense. So, again, two different perspectives from two different quarterbacks. Again, I like Carolina 31-17. I think they're too powerful. I think they have too many weapons for Denver. I think they have the best player on the field in Cam Newton. I think that they just match up well against Denver. Like, this is a tailor-made matchup for Carolina, getting a team that can't hurt them in the back end and getting a team that likes to rush the passer, you know, with their running against that powerful offensive line, that great running game that they have, and have a quarterback that can move as well. So I like Carolina 31-17 and to take home Super Bowl 50, which would be their first in their franchise's history. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of 12-11 Sports Talk, featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. I will see you next time. So long.